John, what's going on, man? Thanks for joining me.
Well, how are you? I you know, listening a little bit before coming on, you were talking about brawls, and it dawned on me, you were, and this wasn't a brawl, but this was a lot of friction that I remember. And I wonder if you recall, back in the late 90s, maybe 97, when Dusty Baker and your manager, Felipe Alou, had a little war of words because Dusty accused Felipe of stealing signs. And I vaguely remember you were on that team and maybe at second base. And I'm thinking, wow, this is all tied together here. But, and Felipe kind of criticized Dusty, and he kind of brought up race, you know, one minority manager criticizing the other, to which Dusty said it's got nothing to do with it. You know, black or white, it turned into a huge story. And these are great friends, you know, they played the same era. Dusty respects the heck out of Felipe. But do you remember that?
I do. And it's funny that you bring it up. One of my favorite stories about being a rookie in Montreal was I grew up a Robbie Thompson fan, and he was one of my favorite players. And I got to second base for the first time against the Giants, and all of a sudden Robbie's coming over. I'm like, oh, man, here it is. I get to meet, like, my favorite Giant. Will Clark and Robbie Thompson were my two favorites. So Robbie was still there, and I get to second. And Robbie comes over, and he says, hey, man, are you stealing signs? Are you really in signs for second base? Like, you better not be doing that crap. And he didn't use the word crap, and there was a lot of profanity involved. And he just, like, aired me out at second. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Like, this is a guy I grew up rooting for, RT. I've gotten to know him over the years, and I was just, like, mortified. I'm like, no, no. And I wasn't. I never did that. But apparently something in my lead, like, looked like I was relaying signs. I would come clean. I have nothing to hide. It wasn't like we had buzzers on our chest or anything. It was the kind of cheating that was the old school cheating. If you were dumb enough to let me get your signs, then we'd relay them. But we didn't do that. At least at that time, especially as a rookie, we weren't doing that. So then, John, I get to third base, and Matt Williams is there. I'm like, all right, Matt Williams. Well, I just got aired out at second, and then he does the same thing. He's like, hey, man, you relaying signs? And then Dusty was yelling at Felipe, and they were going back and forth. And Dusty and I had known each other from Sacramento, so here I am, a rookie, not really knowing what's going on, and I'm in the middle of this big melee between two Hall of Fame managers going at it. And that's a story for another day, John, but has there ever been a big league team that's had back-to-back-to-back Hall of Fame managers like the San Francisco Giants? Because Dusty's going to get in, Felipe should get in, and Bruce Bochy's a lock. I mean, that's got to be a story, doesn't it?
I bet not. I mean, you look at, you know, all the great Yankee teams and maybe back-to-back, but not three straight. And I'm with you about Felipe. I mean, he was discriminated against because of his color and the fact that English was not his first language. And it took him to his late 50s. He was the best minor league manager in baseball, as you know, because you played for him. And the Expos took forever. And in retrospect, the people hiring admitted it was a mistake. Because when he showed up, he outmanaged everybody. But I'm thinking he should be a Hall of Famer. You should count those minor league years because he should have been there. I mean, Jackie Robinson is a Hall of Famer. He played 10 years. Of course he's a Hall of Famer. But let's also count, you know, what he did in the Negro Leagues, even though it was 1 year. But what he did for everything. And with Felipe, I think you have to count that. An ambassador to the game, a great player. I mean, 2,000 hits, 200 home runs, World Series, All-Stars. And I think only, you know, what Frank Robinson and Dusty Baker could say that they like won 2,000 games, they hit got 2,000 hits, hit 200 home runs. That's a select club. And these days, the Hall of Fame is more than in the past looking at the entirety of a career. They did so with Joe Torre. They measured his playing career along with his managing career, even though he went in as a manager. So that is good news for Dusty Baker, because even if he doesn't win a World Series, I think you and I both agree he's a Hall of Fame manager, and now he's on a 2000 win list and moving up quickly. But I just think Felipe, for all he's done in the game, he just doesn't get the Cooperstown credit that he deserves, and he should.
Lifetime Achievement Award. I mean, the first Dominican-born major league manager. And John, in 1990, the West Palm Beach Expos, he still calls it the best team he ever managed. We were 92-50. We were 42 games over 500 with a bunch of throwaway players, a bunch of release players. We had some prospects as pitchers, but we won every single night. And you and I talked about this at the ballpark the other day. He outmanaged all these kids that were trying to be big league managers, say like a 30-year-old kid managing at the A-ball level. And he would watch guys on first base, and he would say, this guy is going right here, but I got to see if my catcher can throw him out. I could pitch out, but I got to see if my guy can throw him out, because he's like managing to win, but he's also managing to develop players. And he was so good at teaching us the nuances of the game. He taught me a lot about pro baseball. He taught me more about being a man. And how to be honest and off the field, and how to carry yourself as a professional, how to carry yourself on the field as a professional. And I mean, I owe this guy my big league life and maybe my career, because he took a chance on me, John. And I've told this story a bunch of times, so forgive me for retelling it again. In 1995, there was the lockout, and there was the replacement players, and Kevin Malone wanted us all to go over and play in these replacement games. And he came to home plate one day, and he got all the minor leaguers together. And it was my seventh year in the minors. I'm making $10,000 a year with a wife and a kid. And he's telling us, hey, yeah, you guys all have to go play in the replacement games. And if the big leaguers say anything to you, you can blame it on me. And he goes, and if anybody has a problem with that, you can walk out right now. And I was the only guy out of 250 minor leaguers that put my backpack over my shoulder and walked from home plate on field four all the way to the clubhouse out the left field gate by myself. And all my buddies are like, what are you doing, dude? Like, oh my gosh. It was like you could have heard a pin drop. So I'm thinking, John, maybe I made a mistake. I don't think me getting hit off a truck driver is going to show my big league manager that I can play at the big league level. So I'm walking out that day, and Felipe grabs me and he says, I've always had respect for you as a player, and today I have more respect for you. I'm going to call you up this year. And a man to his word, on August 2nd, 1995, after the Expos called me back, after I left camp and went back to AAA, he called me up. So I owe that guy a lot. I mean, as a person, as a human being, as a baseball player, he's a Hall of Fame man, and I hope he gets into the Hall of Fame. But let's switch gears a little bit and talk some Joey Bart, speaking of maybe a guy that the Giants would love to get back to the big leagues and love to be in the Hall of Fame someday. I mean, I think this is awesome, John. We're talking to John Shea, by the way, national baseball writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. I'm FP Santangelo. Listen to KMBR tonight. I think it's awesome that you went down to AAA and that you did a piece on Joey Bart. I mean, a lot of reporters, a lot of writers, a guy gets sent down. I don't care what kind of prospect he is. They just forget about him because they're in AAA. And you went down there and spent the day in Sacramento and did a wonderful piece on Joey Bart. What did you see? Can you tell us anything about it?
Yeah, no, thank you for that. It was a good call to do it because he went 3 weeks with only playing a couple games in Sacramento. You remember right after that trip, the Giants got back from Miami, and a couple of days later, they sent him down. But they really didn't send him down. He stayed at San Francisco for a week. It took a few days off just to get his mind right, and then work with Justin Veal for about 3 days, redoing his whole stance. And then they sent him to AAA, where Damon Minor, the old Giant first baseman who's now the hitting coach, has been inheriting the game plan and what they're all working on. So it's kind of a weird thing to have a mid-season like step back where you just do nothing except take BP, work with coaches, look at film, and try to redo your whole stroke. You usually do that in the off season or an instructional league or in Arizona, but here we are in the middle of the season and he just didn't hit well enough to stick around. And instead of sending him back to AAA and asking him to do the same thing with a 40% strikeout rate, they said, hey, let's change things up. And it's dramatic. I took a lot of video that's inserted in the story that ran today, but it's also online, of his four at-bats. And anyone who's seen him a lot can make, realize some, obvious changes. I spoke with him a long time, Justin Veal, some other people in Sacramento. The whole thing is to simplify, fewer moving parts, see ball, hit ball, right? But they don't use that old school line anymore. They break it down, and Justin Veal did incredibly well with the lower body and the upper body and the mental game. And basically it's the bat is more central. His hands are more central with the setup and he's sort of straight up, but he's kind of bow-legged like he would in a catcher's squat, but not totally down. So, you know, the back leg has got to be in uniform with the torso, which has got to be in uniform with the hands. And it's pretty fascinating stuff because Joey got into it, Justin got into it, and I took a whole bunch of video that really explains what he's doing. So you don't see the elbow way back. You don't see the hands way back. You see the hands in front of him. And once he gets into the load, obviously the hands come back. But there's a whole lot to it, but it's mostly, you know, hands in front of him, the elbows down instead of way back up, tinkering with the legs. And granted, I didn't see a whole lot of great contact. It was only his, third game, and then he played again on Sunday. Actually, that was the second game. Third game was Sunday. And I went and saw him Thursday night up down in Sacramento. So there's a lot to it, and he seems to be all in, and they're all in, and there's no timetable. Figure it out when you can. I mean, he's antsy. He wants to get back and compete and win games because that's the athlete in him. But he's all in on stepping back. So it's going to take time, man, because you just don't do this stuff in mid-season. But what I saw mostly was plate awareness was much better. The second at-bat, he fell behind 0-2, and fans seen that all the time, right? Joey Bart's down 0-2. Well, now he's going to chase and, you know, walk back to the dugout. But he didn't chase on a ball that just missed outside. In the fourth pitch, he didn't chase on a ball that missed outside. And then he got bad on ball, and he blooped a single to right field. I said, shoot, that's progress. It's baby steps, but it's progress. and it's stuff we maybe didn't see last year or in 2020 mostly when he spent a lot of time up, or certainly not in the first couple of months this year. So it's a cool thing, and it was nice to see him and check out the Sacramento vibe. You know, it was a beautiful night, and Robinson Cano was on the other team playing second base. How about
the countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Wow. This is John Shea, national baseball writer for the Chronicle, who went down to Sacramento to check out Joey Bart and see the adjustments he's making. John, as the former hitting coach for the San Jose Giants, I'm sitting here. There's a reason I'm on Cambio right now, but I'm thinking as a former hitting coach that you make these adjustments. The first thing, kudos to the organization for saying take a breather, because your head starts spinning, man. And when you're a prospect and you're replacing Buster Posey and things aren't going well, everything starts going real fast, upstairs especially. And to have a second to just regroup and reset and let your brain slow down before you try to absorb this new approach, to me, is brilliant on the organization's part. If you're going to get this guy back, which there's probably a fear that you're not, if you're going to get this guy back and he's going to contribute, that, hey, let's reset. So check that box, and a standing ovation for that. And number two, John, as a hitter, when you learn something on the fly and you learn something new, it kind of becomes mechanical at first, right? You're thinking and hitting. So I'm putting my hands lower. They're closer to the strike zone, which I love, by the way, and you're seeing a lot of hitters do this. And you're simplifying things. You're standing more upright. But now it's not a natural movement. It's not second nature. So it's going to take, I mean, I can't say because it's different on a case-by-case basis. It's going to take 100 at-bats, maybe 150 at-bats, to where I'm not thinking and hitting. And this is my new approach. And it's 200 swings in the cage every day. It's soft toss. It's batting practice. Now, all of a sudden, you know, you have a tension-free swing. And that's what you're really looking for. You know, like we were talking earlier, I don't know if you were listening, Jock Peterson has a tension-free game where everything he does is so fluid and so relaxed because he's not thinking about anything. He's confident at the plate. And with Joey Bart, you could see the tension in his swing. You could see that I'm 0 for my last whatever, and I've struck out 4 times in a row, and I've been there. I know that feeling. So it sounds like they're on the right path. It sounds like they have a good approach. And I'm really excited about seeing this new version. But based on what you just said, I think it might take a little bit longer than he wants it to take.
Absolutely. And Justin Veal said it has to come down. The last step is going to be timing and rhythm. because I mean, I'm the amateur, you're the pro, but I'm looking at him, you know, putting a foot down, and it just seemed inconsistent with the rest of his body parts, which in my humble view is why he just didn't barrel up in any of the bats I saw. He got a couple of bloop hits, and you know, I think he went 2-for-4 his first game, 2-for-4 second game, 0-for-3 Sunday, and I think he struck out a total of 3 times. And you know, it's not 40% strikeout rate. He's getting a little contact, but not a whole lot. So, you know, Veal told me that it's all going to be timing. As soon as he gets the timing down, then he can take it to the next step. But he also said it's not like we want him here to carry the team. He's not Buster Posey. So if he can get ahead, if he can make some contacts, if he can contribute, move a runner over, whatever, that's all part of it. And you're right about the mental game. Joey admitted to me that it got in his head, and you take it to the plate. And he's wondering mechanically, what am I doing here? And what about all these moving parts? Where are they going? And then he said, you just get lost. And that's an experience that nobody wants, right? But he accepts it now and realizes, you know, that's my toolbox. That's my resume. That's what I've done so far. Now let's figure it out. And Veal said he's going to be uncomfortable for the longest time here because you just don't make adjustments like that drastically and feel good tomorrow about them. You know, it's not slow pitch softball where you say, okay, now I'm going to right field, boom. Okay, I figured that out. These are guys throwing 97, even in AAA. His last at bat, I saw, oh my God, this wicked slider. And, you know, not everyone throws 97 down there, but they treat the minors just like the majors, where they stack their bullpen with a bunch of hard-throwing right-handers and some crappy lefties. And so it's similar, but it's really not, because it's more about development there, not about winning. But Bart, I talked to him after the game, and he was bummed that they lost the game. It wasn't bummed that, you know, he got out a couple times and got a couple of bloop hits, but he was bummed they lost the game because he caught 9 innings. And, you know who else I saw was down there was the guy they just called up. You mean Mercedes. What a great story he is. All of a sudden he appears with the Giants farm team, and he's the guy that got in it with Tony La Russa last year. Remember he started his career with like 8 straight hits?
Yes.
Well, now the Tony's coming to town. And remember that whole – and it just dawned on me that – the unwritten rule of swinging 3-0 when they were boat racing the other team, but a position player was on the mound and Larusa got all over him. And, you know, for breaking the unwritten rule, never swing 3-0, especially when there's a position player out there. The guy hits a home run and he's parading around the bases, and Tony got all over him. But now he's on a team that spits at unwritten rules. You know, go ahead, do whatever you want. Swing 3-0, swing whatever you want, and dance all you want around the bases. And it doesn't matter what the score is. You know, run up the score. We're up 6-0. We're up 8-0. Steal a base in the 8th. It doesn't matter because it's all about winning the series and maybe getting that one extra reliever to come in out of the bullpen so he can't be used tomorrow so we can beat him tomorrow. So it's kind of funny how this all turned out.
That is weird.
Sorry to go off topic here.
No, it's all right. It's all right. You're on an ADD show. My kids spell dad ADD, so don't worry about it. No, it's cool to have him here. And if you remember last year, you're right. He was like 8 for his first 8. He was hitting like 470 at the month of April. And then all of a sudden he went south and he went on this big offer. And Frank Menachino is a big friend of mine and a good friend of mine. He's not very big, but he's a good friend of mine. And he was telling me about how he was trying to like balance this whole thing out for this kid, that he was a good kid. He just wanted to succeed. And I remember that. A 3-0 gets a position player, and then he kind of like watched the home run, and Tony La Russa's old school. But I don't know where you stand on this, John, but I used to be old school. I used to think unwritten rules, what is he doing? And probably the last 3 or 4 years, I'm like, hey, every generation has their signature on the game of baseball. And if this is what these kids want, just let them play and no unwritten rules. I'm all for it. Who cares? If they don't care, I don't care. I think where you get the friction is between the old school guys on their way out and then you get the young guys on their way in, and that's where the heads butt. But what's your take on unwritten rules? Have you ever written about it?
Oh, yeah. I'm so with you. I mean, it's rare that a young Madison Bumgarner comes up in 2009, 2010, and has this feud with Yasiel Puig, old school, new school. And I remember Sergio Romo in the seventh inning would strike out a guy, and it looked like he just hit a walk-off home run. And I love watching body language. I always look at the other team, what's their reaction. And slowly but surely, that's gone out of the game. It's like, how come there's no reaction over there? Well, because our relievers are doing the same thing. And when a guy pips a home run, and the other pitcher, it's not like Clemens or Dave Stewart or these guys, going back further, Gibson and Drysdale, even Nolan Ryan, you don't have those guys anymore because they all came up together and they all watch these colorful animated ball players coming from different countries and they celebrate. Whereas like Mays and Aaron, they couldn't celebrate. I mean, Mays was a different cat because he celebrated in his own way, with the smile and the cap falling off and the basket catch. That was his way of being a modern-day player in his time, whereas nowadays that would be tame. And I would love to see Willie Mays-type play now with how good of a five-tool guy he was. Plus, he was such a colorful ball player that all eyes, were directed right at him. But the game has changed so much because it's not just American ball players playing. It's Japan, it's the Dominican, it's Mexico, it's Canada. It's all over Europe and South America. So why not? I mean, celebrate the way these guys grew up. That's how they played. So bring it on.
I agree 100%. You going to be at the ballpark tomorrow?
I'm not sure yet. The Mighty Tigers?
Yeah, the Mighty Tigers rolling into town at 28-44, 12 games back in the AL Central. We'll see how that goes. But I always enjoy my time with you, John. Thanks for taking the pictures of my son and I at the ballpark the other day.
Oh, yeah.
It's just so good to be home, be around him, be around my family. It's just been such an awesome time for me to see guys like you and people I grew up with. So thanks for coming on tonight. He's at John Shahay on Twitter. He's a biographer of the Willie Mays book, a Ricky Henderson book. And he's a good dude and a great writer. John, thanks for coming on tonight. Good stories, man. Appreciate it.
With those words, I'm coming on every night.
Yeah, man. I'll see you at the yard soon, man. Thanks for coming on.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville? Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Good for my career. Sent me to rehab, though. So that's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.